Support for Soundwaves from the Underground is brought to you by 24tix.com, the most convenient way to buy tickets to your favorite local concerts. Save time, save money, rock out. 24tix.com, your ticket to the experience.
My phone's ringing. Hold on a minute. Hey, Mom, I gotta call you back.
This is really happening.
All right, she didn't want to talk to me anyway.
She pocket dialed you? You
no,
answered
I don't know. The podcast. I don't know how she works.
I'm JP, and welcome to another edition of Soundwaves from the Underground, the official podcast of Slug Magazine in Salt Lake City, Utah. Slug is an acronym for Salt Lake Underground, and we're one of the oldest independent publications in the U.S., distributing free monthly issues about music, art, sports, and subculture. On today's episode, we'll be doing an E3 recap with one of our writers, we'll be finding out about the Salt Lake City Main Library's new digital catalog, and we'll be getting more information about the Salt City Derby Girls and their new season. E3 is the Electronic Entertainment Expo. It's the annual convention for people involved in the computer and video game industry, where you'll find companies such as Nintendo, Microsoft, Sony, and hundreds of other developers using the expo to highlight the biggest games coming out over the next year. Slug Magazine sent writers Henry Glashine and Thomas Winkley, who happened to cover it for Big Shiny Robot, to the expo this year to cover the event. And Henry has emerged alive and victorious. Thanks for joining me, Henry.
It's my pleasure to be here.
Now, this is your first time at E3, actually your first time to Los Angeles in general. What was that like, the culture shock of being in LA?
Well, descending through the fog bank that perpetually surrounds it is kind of nice, but it was pretty much a straight shot of 80s music all the way down. It was a kind of a weird culture shock. You just see so many people on the street. It's very different from Salt Lake City, but it's nothing I'm not too terribly used to. I used to live in Southern California, so, you know, it was nice. We went to a couple of pizza places. We went to this this place called Lucky Strikes that was a combination bar, restaurant, bowling alley, which blew my mind.
It was awesome. Sign me up. Wow.
Yeah, I was totally sold on that one.
And you mentioned the soundtrack, so walk me through this. You're leaving Salt Lake. What do you put on there?
Well, first what we put on was us talking to each other, because me and Winkley had only met about a week beforehand, and we had just kind of hashed out the ideas for what we were going to do with the show. But it was mostly just radio, and there's like this huge dead zone outside of Nevada where you just don't get any radio. I don't remember much of the individual songs we listened to. It was mostly just a blur.
It sounds like one of those Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas sorts of trips. You guys had a suitcase full of drugs.
Obviously.
Ether and such.
We had to have tons of drugs on hand for the just overwhelming experience of being at E3. Obviously. No, and that was sarcasm for all those listening.
What?
Oh.
What?
Yeah.
So you finally arrived at E3. You make it through the fog that is the exterior of Los Angeles. And what were your first impressions about the expo hall when you got there?
When I first got there, I had just actually went to Nintendo's press conference beforehand. It was at the Nokia Theater, which is about a block away. I walked in and I was struck by, you know, the fact that they were able to put so much promotional material on this huge convention center. I remember being immediately assaulted by just audio and visual feedback. There was just huge screens just playing through demo footage, so much music, so much dubstep, which was driving me insane. It just, like, it all kind of melded together into this incoherent mass of light and sound that I really have a hard time piecing through even now.
What was your favorite game that you saw, or what were you most excited about when you got there?
I don't think that's actually a fair question, just
Sorry.
Because you're asking the wrong guy. I showed up without any expectations whatsoever, and I was actually kind of impressed with the showing from third-party developers. But once I got there, I was actually struck most by a demonstration of this game called Dishonored that was being put on by Bethesda. It was developed by Arkane Studios, and it's kind of this stealth action game based in this steampunk world. It's like Victorian England. Everything is powered by this substance called whale oil, and they just harvest it by the tonnage, and you just see like these ships coming by, and they've got these huge whales strung up on them. Huh. And they power these like crazy machines that people walk on. They have these things called the tall boys, which are these tall guys with energy packs on their backs, and they're on these huge stilts that let them see pretty much wherever you are.
They're like some sort of police presence.
Yeah, and it's a very impressive game, but very fun. I actually got to play a little bit of it as a demo after the demonstration we saw. For the most part, I was actually really impressed with the gameplay. It just reminded me of playing through any kind of game where it's you have free reign to do whatever you want tactically in the game.
It's a sandbox style?
It's very mission-based, so it's not necessarily sandbox style, but you can approach things in a very open manner. So you can use this thing called like a blink spell where you just teleport on top of a tall thing, or you know, you can summon a swarm of rats, and you can possess people for short periods of time. There's a lot of really fun, really utilitarian spells that are just like really fun to use, and I just spent the entire demo rolling through those and using different ones.
So it sounds like a computer game, not necessarily for a specific platform?
Oh no, it's for Xbox and PlayStation 3, I'm pretty sure. I imagine they put it out for PC afterwards, but you know, there's always the PC port afterwards.
So this was, I'm not familiar with that. Is that a third-party studio that just happened to get distribution on mainstream platforms?
The production company Bethesda, they kind of have a bunch of different development companies under their umbrella nowadays. Like they have ZeniMax producing their new MMO, which is the Elder Scrolls Online MMO. Which was the other thing we saw at that demonstration. Yeah, Arkane Studios worked with 2K on Bioshock 2 and a couple of other titles that, you know, I either can't remember or don't care to remember.
And you mentioned that MMO. Were you excited about that as well?
To be honest, I'm not really much of an MMO gamer. I'm much more of a, you know, single-player type guy. But it seemed like it was doing something really interesting with the formula. It still seemed a lot like World of Warcraft, to be completely honest with you. But, I mean, you can't really escape that. You're playing an MMO, it's probably going to have skills, and you're probably going to have fetch quests, and you're pretty much going to be stuck in that same cycle of ridiculousness.
And E3 lasts for about a week or 3 days, what is it?
Yeah,
somewhere in there?
It's a three-day expo, and it's just, they had like three major halls where they had a whole bunch of developers and first-party studios, like Sony, Nintendo, and Microsoft.
But the party begins earlier, right? A few days before and goes afterwards. It's just like an excuse for people to go let loose.
Yeah, there's a bunch of after parties too. Like we went to Riot Games' after party, which was really cool. They're the people behind League of Legends, which is a arena-based multiplayer game online. Tons of my roommates play it. They love it. But we got to talk with a bunch of the developers there. It was pretty excellent stuff.
It sounds like a killer after party.
Yeah. It was actually at that Lucky Strikes bar where we bowled, and then we were actually bowling in the lane next to the Konami guys, and we were sitting there watching them get drunk off their asses. It was really exciting because they were all super stoked to be there because they were all super, super drunk. And they were doing really, really well at bowling, might I add. They were just totally dominating us. It was great.
Well, since that Wii Bowling came out, everyone's better at bowling.
Yeah, everyone's in practice.
It's a fact. It's a fact, yeah. That goes to show you, though, that people's conception of E3 is maybe a little bit different than what you might think. There's definitely a lot of partying. It's like any other convention with a lot of money riding on a digital platform sort of thing. It's what you might expect from any sort of event in LA.
Yeah, E3 is a little bit different, though, because it is a lot more centered around the vendors. You know, they don't really care about selling the games to the individual gamers who are there or to the press that's there. They kind of expect you as press to just passively cover whatever they put in front of you, and then they kind of cart you away afterwards. So
and put you in bowling alleys.
Yes, and they put us in bowling alleys.
What was your favorite part of E3, would you say?
My favorite part of E3 was probably spending time just like walking around the booths, because they had these really elaborate setups for their displays. Like they had, I never ended up going to play any of the games, but they had this huge display, which was like four huge columns and a roof for war games. And they had, you know, four different games that they had developed as a company, and it was really interesting. And then they had like huge rotating Sonic the Hedgehog statues, and Square Enix had this enormous like 100-foot screen where they were playing through their demo reel for Final Fantasy Agnes. I think it's just supposed to be a tech demo. It's not supposed to be evidence of a actual product that they're going to put out. That was pretty interesting too. But I think the most fun I had was Personally, it was hanging out at the Atlas booth. I got a pretty cool t-shirt there, and I also got to play this game that's a fighting game based on one of my favorite RPGs, which is Persona 4, for all those who want to judge me about being a total nerd about that. But yeah, I think that was where I had the most fun, getting my ass kicked by a bunch of strangers at a fighting game.
And speaking of getting your ass kicked, is there a line where you're seeing things cross over more into virtual reality where people are going to be able to be more engrossed in the games, and how is E3 showing that?
You know, I think Nintendo has been constantly trying to push that boundary, but they keep getting in their own way, I think. They showcased the Wii U, which is kind of more of like an expansion console than an actual new console. It has the ability to produce HD graphics and all of that. But at the core of it is this idea of having a gamepad that's more like a tablet that you can actually do game functions on, and it's called asymmetric gameplay, where you can have the four people, your friends, they're all on Wiimotes on the screen, and they're using the Wiimotes to control the game, and you have the tablet there, and you're controlling a completely different end of the game. Like, they showed this game in Nintendo Land, and I think it was like Boo's Haunted Mansion. And the entire premise is that you're four ghost hunters wandering around this mansion that's really dark. And the person with the tablet is a ghost. And you can use a bunch of different tactics. And you can basically you win by getting all of their batteries out and knocking them all out. But having two different styles of play in the same game is kind of cool. And it's really breaking down a boundary that existed between the gamer and the developer beforehand.
That sounds really interesting.
Yeah.
Actually. And how do you spell that? The Nintendo Hue? H-U-E?
Oh, no. It's Wii U. So it's like W-I-I-U. Capital U. Oh,
okay. Thank you for that.
Yeah, no problem.
And thank you for going down there and exploring it for everyone else that had to stay here in Utah. I was super jealous, probably, of your experience.
Oh, totally.
And we can find more coverage from you online at slugmag.com.
Right on.
Thanks for joining me, Henry. I appreciate it.
I appreciate it too, JP.
Huldra is an experimental ambient metal band from Salt Lake City who originally formed in April of 2010. And then in November 2011, the group released their debut EP, Signals from the Void. This month, the band released a self-titled split album with local post-hardcore band Dustbloom, who contributed 3 of the 7 tracks. From that EP, here's Huldra with Nocturnal Wings. That was Holdra's Nocturnal Wings off the self-titled split with Dustbloom. To download the full album or purchase a physical copy, head over to holdrathebandbandcamp.com, and for more info on the group and future shows, visit them online at facebook.com/holdratheband. That's H-U-L-D-R-A, the band. Earlier this year, the Salt Lake City Public Library System made a move to form an online catalog. New titles, as well as a steady amount of older entries, are being uploaded to the library system in PDF and audio formats for people with smartphones and, of course, e-reader devices to check out titles in an easier fashion. The change also came with the introduction of an iPhone app that allows users to search the catalog, pay fees, and make reservations all from their phone. Slug writer Johnny Logan recently interviewed senior creative producer Andrew Shaw about the catalog and the new changes coming to the SLCPL.
So to start out with, what is an online catalog?
Sure, the online catalog is how all of our patrons access our catalog of materials, all the materials we have in our collection through the internet. So anybody who uses a library is probably so familiar with it that it doesn't even need to be said, but it's where you just have easy access to all of our materials and the titles that we have and placeholds and things like that.
Now, can you tell us a bit about what the City Library's online presence was before this new catalog update?
Sure. So our previous catalog, what we now call the Classic Catalog, it was really traditional, a very traditional library catalog. It had kind of what you probably expected from libraries over the last 10 years. You type in a search word and hopefully can find the item that you're looking for. It wasn't necessarily the prettiest. It wasn't necessarily the smartest. If you misspelled a word, it would just be like, sorry man, don't got it. So the new catalog is definitely an improvement on that, and also brings in a lot more of the social elements of the web that people expect in the age of Facebook.
Now tell us about the new update. You know, what does the new online catalog entail?
The new catalog is part of a consortium catalog. So this catalog is used by lots of other libraries around North America and around the world. Like New York Public Library uses it. So we're connecting with those users as well as connecting with other people in Salt Lake City. The catalog gives you better access to just do basic searches the way that you would in the classic catalog, but it's more intuitive. So if you misspell Harry Potter, it'll say, did you mean Harry Potter? So it's a lot easier to find the materials you're looking for. The search is much smarter. It's more like Google, where instead of having to put together a complex, like my author name is this and the title includes this word, you type in your one search term and it is more intuitive. It can find the materials that you're looking for just with regular user jargon. But then it goes beyond that into things that, like I said, like people expect in the world of social media and Amazon, where you can leave reviews for materials, you can give starred reviews, you can give a synopsis. If there's a trailer for a movie, you can go to YouTube, find that trailer, and put it in our catalog. And so you can create your own trailer for the book and put it in our catalog. There's lots of ways that you can interact with our materials that just wasn't at all possible in the classic catalog. And it's kind of what people are expecting from these sort of materials. When you're doing a material search, it's more of a web, social, interactive way of finding materials. So maybe you're looking up a book, you're like, well, my sister said I should read this book. Let me go on there. You can see other people's reviews. You can watch their videos. Same things with music. Let's say you want to check out the new Kimbra album. You can go on there and maybe somebody has connected the Kimbra video from YouTube on to the catalog. So you start to really get a more immersive experience with our materials when you're sitting there at the catalog. There's another aspect that is new with the new catalog is that you can keep track of the materials that you've checked out. This is a feature that people have been asking for years, and we just didn't have a way of providing it. So if you've checked something out and you check it back in, previously it was just gone from your record and there was no way of ever knowing. So when you want to search back, I know I checked out this awesome CD and I can't remember what it was called. Now you can go back, you can keep your shelves up to date, and you can say, oh yeah, I've checked out the first three Led Zeppelin albums, and now I need to get the fourth, you know? That sort of, you know, it helps you more with your kind of world of exploration.
I'd like to hear a little bit more about the exploration options in the catalog, specifically the browse the shelf option. Can you tell us what that option is?
So the browse the shelf option is a really cool thing that I never even thought of before we saw this catalog. But when you come to the library, often the way that our books are organized or our movies or our CDs are organized on the shelf is that you might be going looking for a specific thing, but then once you're standing there at the shelf, you're also looking at the other materials around it. So if you're looking for a book of pictures of wolves, you might look it up in the catalog and you'll find the one specific book that you wanted to look at. And you get to the shelf and you realize that there's five books to the left and to the right that are also really cool books of pictures of wolves. And so you can kind of see, oh, well, these are more anatomical or these are more passionate or whatever. And so it helps you find, when you're standing at the shelf, you can find the material that you really want. So the browse the shelf function in our catalog now does the same thing. You can find the book that you're looking for, but then when you browse the shelf, it shows you a graphic view of the shelf, and you can see other things that are around it, so just things that would be similar in that topic or in that genre. And yeah, it's really fun.
Now, with that option, do you know if it'll display books that are already checked out?
I think there's a way to turn off the books to not display the books that are checked out and only show things that are currently available. It's really cool to be able to see the things that are checked out, because often that's what you want as well. You know, you don't only want the things that are sitting on the shelf. Those are the things that nobody else wants. You want the music and the movies that other people in your community are interested in. And so it's great to be able to see everything in the collection, even those that are in other people's homes, because then you can place your hold, you can get in line for it and make sure that you have it in the next couple of weeks.
Will the new online catalog have more e-content available for patrons?
Yeah, the library over the last couple of years, the City Library has really focused on providing more digital content for users. E-books, downloadable audiobooks, downloadable music. We have put a lot of focus on making sure that that collection is also coming up, because that's, again, what our users want. And it's really neat being able to download a book from OverDrive sitting in your house, use your library card. You can check it out just like any other book, but it goes onto your iPad or your iPhone or your Nook or whatever you're using. And all of those, the classic catalog didn't make it as easy to put that sort of e-content in with all the other materials. And the new catalog does make that a lot easier. We're still kind of catching up to it, and so you'll see over the next few months that more e-content is shown in the catalog. But as you're browsing through all of our books, you'll also notice every so often there's an ebook here, there's a downloadable audiobook, and those are things you can just access immediately and have right there.
Now, with the downloadable ebooks, can you keep those on your device forever, or is there a limit to that?
There is a limitation. You check it out just like you check out a book from the library, mm-hmm. and there's a due date. And at that due date, if you try to access it, the first time you try to access it after the due date, it goes, oh, your turn's up, and then it deletes from your device, and so the next person can take it. Because the library still has to, in order to be legal, we have to purchase a certain amount of licenses, and so only a certain amount of licenses are available. So if three people are already using it and we only have three licenses, then you might have to wait in the queue for a little while for it to become available to you, just like a physical book. The world of digital content is still so young that libraries and the industry are all trying to figure out, how does it work? How does this work for libraries? How does it fit into that model? And I think it's great that instead of just saying, well, it doesn't fit, and denying libraries, the industry's working with libraries, the library's pushing back and saying, you know, this is how we need to be able to provide access. And it's just kind of an exciting time for libraries, because it's a whole new format.
Now, there was also a mobile app launched kind of in collaboration with the new online catalog. How is that functioning, and what services are available through it?
Sure. The mobile app is awesome. It totally changed the way that I interact with the library. And I've worked here for almost a decade now, and as soon as I downloaded the app to my iPhone, it changed the way that I interacted with my own library, because it's always there and it's always ready and I'm always logged into it. So if I want to see when my next CD is due back, or if I want to see how close I am to getting a hold, or if I want to just browse through the catalog and find other content or leave reviews or whatever, it's all right there on my phone. It's currently our app is available on the iTunes store, and we're still in beta testing with the Android one, but it looks like in the next month that should be available for Android phones too. Yeah, it offers all of the exact same functions that you get with our catalog online. It's just super quick. It's really easy to browse through the newest stuff that we've added to our collection, to the latest things that have been reviewed. So kind of buzz books and things start suddenly float to the surface because everybody's leaving their reviews. Yeah, it's a cool app. I think it's pretty amazing that public libraries are able to provide that sort of tool that you kind of only associate with big businesses.
And the app is free, yes?
Yeah, the app is totally free. Just search for Salt Lake City Public Library in the iTunes store and you'll find it.
I also hear that we'll be getting two new libraries, one in Glendale and one in Marmalade by 2014. Do you know if they're going to be integrating any new technology either put into use in the library or being made available to library patrons?
Sure. The library right now, the city library is looking at all sorts of new technologies all the time. We're in a real big push to make sure that we're keeping up. And the new branches, whenever you build a new building, you suddenly have this blank slate. So you can build a building that has all the latest technology, that has all the access to everything that you need. Since we are still a couple years out from those buildings being finalized, right now they're in a stage where we can't necessarily even predict what they're going to have. We have community committees working on them, getting a lot of feedback from the community about what they expect from the library, doing a lot of research into future public library trends and just general technology trends. So I can't really guarantee you now what they're going to have. I know they'll have computers, I know they'll have Wi-Fi. We're looking at new ways to do what we call materials handling. But right now when you check in a book back into the library, one of our people is picking it up and checking it in. But there's a lot of ways to automate that and make that go faster. And so there's kind of those sort of new technologies that we're looking into that make libraries better, but then also helps us provide better service for the community. I can't be specific, but I know that we're always looking at everything that's going to be hot and new. And 2014, one in Glendale around the 15th South, 15th West area, one in the Marmalade neighborhood on 3rd West and 5th North. You can drive by and see the empty lots right now, and hopefully in 2 years you'll see a shiny building.
To find more about the library's new catalog and new editions on the way, visit them online at their new and improved website, slcpl.org. Every week we like to run down upcoming events in a segment we call the Weekly Daily Calendar Rundown. It's a lot of running down in there. And today I'm joined by Ricky. He's going to help me track it down. Is that better?
I like running. I like tracking. Track and field is really my strong suit. You could probably tell by my physique. But yeah, I'm glad to be here, JP.
And what we do is we tell you about upcoming events like this one, Tuesday, June 26th. It's going to be another Dr. Sketchy's night, a tribute to Betty Page. Have you ever been to Dr. Sketchy's?
I have been. Actually, I've been here the last few times we've talked about Dr. Sketchy's. I went last month and the month before. You go to a bar, in this case the Metro Bar, and you basically do some figure drawing. They have people dressed up in different themes. This time it's a Betty Page theme. I imagine it's going to be all women. You never know. They like to break the rules. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. You just go pay $5 to get in, buy some drinks, and do some sketching.
And on that same day, Jimmy Cliff is going to be at Red Butte, which is a fantastic music series up at the Red Butte Gardens. Mm-hmm. It takes place all summer long. Have you ever been to a Red Butte show?
I have never. I actually think I want to go to this one, though. Jimmy Cliff, I have a huge Jamaican man crush on Jimmy Cliff. He's like been involved in popular Jamaican music for like 40-something years. And he has a new EP out, actually, that was recorded with Tim Armstrong from Rancid. So it's like reggae with a lot of punk rock influence and stuff. So yeah, I like Jimmy Cliff.
Sounds like you're gonna have a tough choice, Betty Page or Jimmy Cliff. Reggae or broads?
Well, it's a decision I struggle to make every day.
And Wednesday, June 27th, it's going to be an exciting hump day, because Tycho is
gonna be at Urban.
That will be exciting. Do you like Tycho?
I like him all right.
Yeah, he's pretty mellow. He's like down-tempo, electronic. I guess some people might call him chill wave, but we listen to him in the office when it's nice and slow in the morning.
It's perfect for a Monday.
Yeah, that's the Wednesday though.
I was just saying Monday, it's the office. Yeah. I know what day of the week.
Yeah.
His Ricky thanks. And it's a birthday on that day. Do you want to do the birthday?
Yeah. Happy birthday, Dave Brewer. He is one of our photographers. He also runs the SLC Photo Collective. We like Dave. Happy birthday, Dave.
We definitely do like Dave. And Friday, June 29th, marks the beginning of Velo Weekend. It's when Velo City Bags hosts its annual Biker Frenzy. And that's not the kind of guys that go to
Sturgis.
It's not that one motorcycle thing. We're talking about cyclists here.
Yeah. I mean, it might be kind of cool if it was like Sturgis, but I'm sure the bike community here has a lot of fun without.
Yeah, their mustaches are ironic. They're not the kind that mean, you know, the guy's gonna punch you in the face.
Yeah, they didn't
talk
hurt
to his old lady.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mean to shit talk him. It's gonna be fun.
We're not shit talking.
No, not at all.
I'm just saying they're not that kind of bikers.
No, okay, that's what we're doing.
Yeah. They're cyclists.
Yeah.
They're bicycle enthusiasts, if you will.
And we had an interview last week with Nathan and Debbie from Velo City Bags, where we talked about Velo Weekend. So if you want more info on that, go back there and listen to it.
Travel back in time.
Yeah.
The wonders of podcasting. And Saturday, June 30th, it's the last Crucial Fest show with Dunn, White Orange, Norska, and Hi-Fi Massacre. I'm sure you're actually going to be going to some of those Crucial Fest shows.
Yeah, for sure. I'm not sure if we'll all hit this one up, but there's a lot of really good shows through the 2 weekends at Crucial Fest. It's really cool that we have something like that in Salt Lake, so we should all go and support them.
It's going to be at Urban Lounge this year, and there's one more birthday.
Oh man, this is a big one. Happy birthday, Princess Kennedy, Slug's favorite tranny.
AKA PK, AKA Kennedy, AKA Salt Lake City's cutest, hottest queen? Can we say that? Should we say that?
Yeah, I don't, yeah.
She's a princess, though.
Yeah, so she is a princess.
She's not really a queen.
I wonder when she'll take on the role of queen.
I don't know.
Is that through, like, election? Not usually for queens, right?
Yeah, I think they mainly are put into place after the death of another monarch.
I wonder who the queen is.
Two straight guys trying to figure out the transgender community on Slick Soundwaves.
Yeah, I think we did an okay job.
We did a pretty damn good job considering we don't know what we're talking about.
Agreed.
Hey, thanks for joining me, Ricky. Remember, everyone, you can check out a hard copy of our calendar in the back of Slug Mag. And you can go to slugmag.com. There's a little graph on the front there with all the dates and everything cool going on in town. And there's something else. What else? What other event thing is there?
On the iPhone app.
Oh yeah, that's it, Ricky.
Yeah, we talk about it every week, even though I don't have an iPhone.
I don't either, but the people that do are really excited because they've got a calendar on there, you got a way to read past issues, and you can listen to all the podcasts we've done. I think this is number 51.
Yeah,
so go back to listen.
Year.
You know what? I'd like to thank you, Ricky, for making it almost 52.
No problem.
And thanks for joining me, and we'll catch you again real soon here.
Yeah, have fun.
Dusk Raps is a hip-hop performer from Salt Lake City, whose career started off as a member of the group Mind State with DJ Hana. In 2010, Dusk set out on his own, first releasing the Smoke Rings beat tape in September of that year, followed by the Brady Effect EP in November of 2010. This month, Dusk releases his first official full-length album, Throw Away the Key, featuring dozens of local producers creating the beats and guest performances from Jack Cracker from The Crest and UBI of CES Crew, among others. Here's Dusk with Apocalypto Sophisto off his new album, Throw Away the Key.
Okay, man. Let's get organized.
Coming down like air cab in a chopper at dawn. Something loud, crowds run around, ring the alarm. Make it ring with my allowance, request my favorite song. Kids always need the parents, spending power too long. Mortar shell shower, devour the bridge of Dolong. We rebuild every night, it's the first of the night. That's our escort to the mouth of the Nung. As soon as hell frees, I clear the LZ, Lord help me. Apocalypse now or never, harder, darker light. Apocalypse, dose of pistol, hard to call. This a fight, I'm staying on the front line. Till they say art flight, push back the tree line. Napalm, pick the design, a gasoline smell. That reminds me of victory, nobody's on the hill. Nobody wanna die, everybody wanna feel that room in the sky. Just ask yourself the question, ain't no need for a reply.
They say someday this world is gonna end. Every generation has something to defend. Until then, it's radiation from the station, sacrificed on behalf of a grateful nation. You could come with me, or you could stay with the boat. Do you need more convincing? We're on parts unknown. First the massive lie, acid die, that's classified. After I put an X in the eyes, we're acting civilized. Apocalypse now or never, hard or dark or light. Apocalypse, dose of pistol, hard to call this a fight. I'm staying on the front line till they say our flight. Push back the tree line, napalm, pick the design. A gasoline smell that reminds me of victory. Nobody's on the hill, nobody wanna die. Everybody wanna feel that room in the sky. Just ask yourself the question, ain't no need for a reply. We're a generation with nothing to save. Most of us rock and rollers, one foot in the grave. I knew I wouldn't be alone in these times and days. L. Johnson flare screen, purple haze. Feels like a life ago, the airfield and the train. I met with the general who played the tape. Brought to me like room service orders to terminate. Never have to put my courage any other way. Apocalypse now or never, hard or dark or light. Apocalypse, dose of fist or hard to call. This a fight, I'm staying on the front line till they say our flight. Push back the tree line, napalm, pick the design. A gasoline smell that reminds me of victory. Nobody's on the hill, nobody wanna die. Everybody wanna feel that room in the sky. Just ask yourself the question, ain't no need for a reply.
That was Dusk with Apocalypto Sophisto off his new album Throw Away the Key. He'll be performing live at the Urban Lounge this Friday, June 29th at 10 p.m. for just $5. Along with Dusk will be Pat Main, Dumb Luck, Wise, Chance Lewis, Inapt, and Johnny Utah. For more info on Dusk, visit him online at facebook.com/dusk.raps. The Salt City Derby Girls is a banked track roller derby league based out of Salt Lake City that originally was formed in 2005 as a flat track league, and then they ran for 4 seasons in various locations until finding a new home at the Salt Palace in downtown Salt Lake City. In 2011, the Salt City Derby Girls decided to switch to a banked track, taking that year off to make the switch and train the league. Slug rider Brighton Metz recently spoke with Salt City Derby Girls owner president Bruhaha about the changes to the league and the upcoming season.
First of all, would you maybe like to tell me about Salt City just as a league?
The Salt City Derby Girls were established in 2005. They were Utah's first all-female roller derby league. We started out as a small group, but the group rapidly grew. By 2006, we had formed our 4 home teams, and by 2007, we had formed our all-star team. And we started just growing and playing against teams, obviously, on the west side, you know, against Colorado and California and Nevada, because it's just really hard to travel. And now in 2012, we have become the first bank track league for Utah.
So why make the switch to bank track?
Well, one of the things is that way back in 2005, you know, before the overabundance of derby information like there is today, it was a very, like, faraway dream. You know, it was only California and Texas were the only ones who had one. At that time, the Roller Girls A&E series was out and it was on a bank track. So it was a very faraway dream. And the derby rumors at that time were like, it cost $500,000 to get a bank track and totally unattainable. And, you know, it was something that I really struggled with because I really felt like roller derby was to be on a bank track. But after all, you know, the little research that was available, it just did not seem like a possible reality. So you started as a flat track like everybody else does. And then, you know, bank track just grew and grew. And if you watch any of the major news sources regarding roller derby, it is all bank track. And one of the days, you know, I just, you know, I'd been wanting to go see LA, and we went on a vacation one time and got a chance to go see Los Angeles play. And it was absolutely amazing. And it took the sport that I knew so well to a whole different level. And that was something that I just felt like Utah needs this, because it goes back to the base roots of why we brought roller derby to Utah. And one of those visions was, you know, Utah needs that alternative scene, needs that alternative place for women where you can come and be yourself no matter who you are, any shape and size, and still dominate, and that was really important. And bringing Bank Track kept in that foundation because it's the way roller derby should be, and it's giving the fans exactly what they want, which is, you know, the action that they grow to love regarding roller derby, along with the alternative edge that each individual skater brings to the game.
Could you explain, just for anybody who doesn't know, the differences between Bank Track and Flat Track?
Bank Track is played on an elevated track. It's like the kind of track that you see from the 1960s, from back in the day. The track is larger than the flat track, and the gate, there's a lot of rules, differences, you know, little things, but it's pretty basic still. You know, it's still roller derby. You're still blocking the opposing jammer from hitting you. You're still trying to get the most points. You're still trying to hit the other team. So that whole basicness is still there. But yeah, the technicalities regarding like lead jammer, that a jammer might, you know, can get lead by just being the foremost jammer. You know, there's no stopped derby in Bank Track. You have to be skating and in motion at all times. You can't go clockwise on the track at all. Things like that, somebody who's more familiar with it can read the rules and start seeing those differences. But just from a basic, you know, layman's point, it's not too different, not something you're not gonna understand or be able to transition into watching a Bank Track game.
I definitely noticed just from the game on Saturday that a lot of the strategy was different. You know, you weren't seeing so many knee starts and no starts. It was all very hard hitting, very fast, just kind of no nonsense kind of derby, which I really like.
Yeah, roller derby, if you think about how it was founded, was about speed. And it really, they did, you know, when it was founded, it was about speed. It was who could go the longest and the fastest. And that is, it's very, very core. And I don't think that has changed, because as a jammer position, the natural thing is to go fast. So yeah, right away on a Bank Track, you do have that elevation where now not only can you go faster, but the hits can be more exaggerated because you are elevated. You're on your side. You're not necessarily going to be able to just hold your ground and not move. You have to move. The natural thing of the track, the motion, you're going to move. And that's why the jammers can go a lot faster. The skaters can go a lot faster. The hits are more dramatic in a sense, even though they hurt a lot less than falling on concrete. So it's definitely a big deal. So yeah, that speed, that excitement comes back to the sport. And even though the strategy is still there regarding, yeah, you don't want, obviously, that jammer to get past you. You have walls and stuff like that. There is no need to be stopped. That need isn't there. It's not, you know, and I think that argument goes in some way deep forums regarding stock derby, but over here we don't have to talk about it.
Obviously, since Salt City has been going for something like 7 years now, how was the transition? Was it easy to make, or was it kind of a long work in progress?
Well, regarding as a skater, it wasn't difficult. You know, a lot of your basics are still the same. Regarding training, yeah, you do have to train your core a lot more than just your thighs and your butt. You have to train your core, because your core is what's holding your balance, and that's very, very key in the Bank Track. You have to have that balance. So regarding the training, yeah, you do have different training methods. And for example, we use Power Jam Fitness right now for our shakers to train that body to be the most strong it can be to maintain that gravity, that, you know, balance. But otherwise, no, it wasn't difficult regarding the transition of the gameplay, because it's still roller derby. In the end, it's still derby, so it wasn't too difficult.
Did you receive like any opposition within the league or within the community to switching over?
No, not at all, actually. You know, with any company, when you go to grow, you have to, you know, grow, and you have to progress as a company. And that was something that when we decided, you know, it was something that I came back with, you know, and I had done all of my research to do what it took to become a Bank Track league. I presented it to our board of directors. The board of directors saw right away like how amazing this was, and were all very excited. Later had to announce it to our league when we became better prepared with more information, and the league was just absolutely flabbergasted. They were just so eager to hurry and get this done. Unfortunately, we did have to sacrifice our 2010 season in order to save up every little penny we could to just buy the track. And it was difficult, but everybody did it happy, smiling, and just ready to go. And it's been really awesome. And now they get to enjoy their new toy that they saved so hard for.
Nice. My friend Chandra actually skates for you guys, and I just always see her Facebook posts about how happy she is. She's like, skating Bank Track's so awesome, and it's changing my perception of Derby, and it's really cool to see that. So how has skating Bank Track changed Salt City's like strategy and playing style?
Well, the Shakers not so much, because the Shakers will still play both flat and bank, so while we do incorporate new strategies that we learn from the Bank Track leagues, it doesn't change the fact that we still have to maintain our flat track roots and manage, you know, the balance of knowing both rule sets. Regarding the home teams, you know, they're all coming up, you know, on their own. We've gotten obviously fresh meat too, so the strategy is just going with the teams and their style of play and how they choose to handle the team members they have and what they're all bringing to the table. So nothing major really. Shakers are still going to skate in any challenge.
Awesome. So the Shakers are your all-star team. You mentioned that they're going to remain skating flat and banked. How does that work? Is it going to be difficult finding competitions or?
No, anybody could ask us to a game. We'll be more than happy to play. Obviously, you know, we can't travel too far because it costs money, but you know, anybody around here who wants to play us, we're more than happy. And it's just allows us to play anybody really, because now we're not limited to, oh, we've never skated on a bank track. No, we train on the bank track and we'll train on the flat as well. It's just whatever game anybody wants to challenge us with, we are ready.
Great, gives you a lot more of that versatility.
Absolutely.
Awesome. So what are Salt City's plans for like the next season and the next few years?
Well, for this season, we only have our home games planned because we had to cut back on cost, and it obviously costs money to host the team, so we have to finish, you know, saving up the rest of the money that we spent on the track and the warehouse. But for hopefully once we, you know, the home teams will have their games and they're going to have a season champion. And by the end of that, we hope to be established enough where we can invite other leagues to come play us here. Hosting is a big deal to us. We enjoy it very much. It's just been really difficult with the transition and building. So unfortunately for 2012, we couldn't have them. So 2013, we're hoping to be able to bring more teams.
The Salt City Derby Girls will have a game this Friday night at the Salt Palace as the Sisters of No Mercy take on the Bomber Babes. The doors open at 6 p.m. at the north entrance. For more information on the league and to purchase tickets or find info on the rest of their season, visit saltcityderbygirls.com. Thanks for listening to another edition of Sound Waves from the Underground. For all things Slug Magazine, visit us at slugmag.com. Feel free to drop us a line and tell us anything about the show at soundwaves@slugmag.com, on our Twitter, slugsoundwaves, or call and leave us a message on our automated voicemail line at 858-233-9324. It's available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We may just play you on the show. Also, a word about Twitter and iTunes. We really, really do love the feedback we get. Any retweet or conversation starter that we begin with you is immeasurably important to us. We also really appreciate any time you might take to go to the iTunes section where the podcasts are kept in there. Subscribe if you haven't already. And if you have, go ahead and rate us a few stars on there. That really helps other people find out about the show. And we appreciate any feedback you want to give in the review section there. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine and is produced by Gavin Sheehan, with associate producers Jeanette D. Moses, Ricky Vigil, Esther Moronio, and Jonathan Paxton. Our executive producer is Angela H. Brown. Our theme was performed by Birthquake and recorded by Jesse Ellis, with our main logo and art design by T-Done, and technical design by Kate O'Connor. On next week's episode, Alt Press Fest, Little Depressed Boy, and Sound Play. Till then.